This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Later this hour, we'll look back on the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago with a retired radio journalist who covered the violence in the streets. And we'll meet the author of a new book that explores what brain science has to say about people who are able to reach higher states of awareness in sports and in everyday life. But first, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum's victory in last night's Democratic primary race for governor was the upset election result of the evening. On the heels of yesterday's primary races, I'm joined now by Florida Gulf Coast University political science professor and frequent guest of the show, Dr. Roger Green, for a closer look at last night's winners and losers and what the results will set up for the November general election contest. Dr. Green, welcome back.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
So obviously, as I just mentioned, Andrew Gillum's victory in the Democratic gubernatorial primary, biggest surprise of the night, especially considering, I think collectively his opponents spent some $90 million compared to Gillum's some $6 million. Just your impressions as you were watching the results come in last night.
Well, it was remarkable. I mean, this is a fascinating race that's shaping up for the general election. But one of the things that made it such a fascinating result was that although Gillum had been surging, in the final stages of the primary campaign and had shown a lot of momentum, a variety of polls were still showing him clearly trailing Graham and Levine at the very least. So I think most observers would have said that his most likely impact on the primary election wouldn't have been that he could actually be victorious, but that his continued surge might have an impact determining the outcome between Graham and Levine. So this was a quite surprising result. I think it underscores a number of things. First of all, it's consistent with the outcomes we've seen in primaries in a number of other states where what you might variously characterize as progressive upstarts are much more powerfully committed progressive candidates outside the mainstream have been successful. And there's been a lot of press coverage of that. Another thing that I think it points towards is Gillum's obvious success in what is always going to be sort of a low turnout affair. I mean, a primary for a non-presidential election, turnout is always going to be a problem. But Gillum, in order to be successful the way he was, obviously had some real success mobilizing young voters in this 18 to 29 demographic as well as minority voters. And that could have some enormous implications not only for the gubernatorial race in the general election, but it could also have some spillover effects for other races such as the senatorial race in Florida, where Bill Nelson has been running a rather lackluster campaign. But if there is an unusual uptick in voter turnout among 18 to 29 voters and minority voters, that could boost incumbent Senator Nelson's chances somewhat against challenger Rick Scott. So a really fascinating outcome. And I must confess that I am one of the people who was impressed by his surge in the late stages and the late-breaking momentum, but I really did not anticipate his winning this primary.
A surprise result, but also a historic one. Gillum now becomes the first black nominee for Florida governor from a major political party in the state's history.
Yes.
How significant is that going to be going into the election for voters?
Well, I think it's going to – first of all, I think it is going to strengthen Democratic chances, at least as compared to what many mainstream observers might suggest, that Gillum would not be a good centrist candidate and might be strategically disadvantaged. I think the problem for the Democrats in midterm elections is always voter turnout among young and minority voters. I think his status both as the first black, nominee in the state's history for the governor's mansion, as well as being relatively young. I mean, he's a young guy. He's 39 years old. Both of those are going to be very fascinating to watch in terms of voter turnout.
The tenor of this campaign going forward. I mean, on the one hand, you have Ron DeSantis, the Trump-endorsed nominee from the Republican Party. And then we have Andrew Gillum, who's, you know, largely been seen among that Democratic pool of candidates to be the most progressive. And, you know, he's got the Bernie Sanders endorsement.
Yes.
So we've got the Sanders-endorsed candidate and the Trump-endorsed candidate. It's like the far right of the right and the far left of the left.
Yes.
What is that going to mean?
Well, I think, first of all, I think this will very likely be not only the most intensely covered gubernatorial race in the country in this upcoming election. I think it could be the most intensely covered race period in the nation in the upcoming election, in part because – not only because of the political significance of Florida as a bellwether even for what we might see 2 years down the road in the presidential election, but I think also this could be intensely covered because – I mean, if you had been trying to craft a theatrical movie script for a fascinating, absolutely fascinating gubernatorial election, you could not have picked two better candidates for that purpose. So it's like in this case, real life is kind of outstripping fiction almost.
Yeah.
And I think we can also anticipate it will be a highly polarizing, highly partisan, and pretty aggressive and ugly campaign. I think there's going to be a great deal, certainly from the Republican side. I mean, you can expect to see – I mean, you've already seen, Trump, referring to Gillum as, the socialist candidate and –
Trump, the failed socialist mayor.
Yeah, the failed socialist mayor of Tampa. Yeah. So – and similarly with, DeSantis having aligned himself so powerfully in the very early stages with Trump, he will be – I mean the campaign strategy against DeSantis will be largely running against Trump. So it's going to be great.
Yeah. Just opening it up a little more, Gillum had been quite vocal about his supportive efforts to repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law and, for greater firearm safety measures. And then meanwhile, you have Matt Caldwell, from our area here in North Fort Myers, won last night's GOP primary for the State Agriculture Commission race. And we've already seen with his ads that he's emphasizing his good favor with the NRA. And now, you have this general election matchup for the state attorney general race between Ashley Moody, who consistently receives A ratings from the NRA, and Democrat Sean Shaw, who touts his F rating from the NRA.
Yes.
We've had at least four mass shootings in Florida in the last 2 years.
Yes.
I mean, is there any way that firearms are not going to be a major hot button issue?
Oh, it's going to be an absolutely enormous hot button issue in this election, and especially, on top of just having had a succession of mass shootings in Florida in the last few years, the fact that, even in the final stages of this primary race, we would have the most recent one in Jacksonville, it's going to put that squarely in the middle of the campaigns in Florida this time around.
I don't want to put the cart too far before the horse here, but hypothetically, if Gillum were to win, I'm wondering what you think about his ability to work and function with what will most likely still be a Republican-controlled state legislature. Because, of course, on some major issues, they couldn't be farther apart. But then I noticed that Andrew Gillum, whenever he spoke at the debate here at FGCU, and I'm just paraphrasing here, but said something along the lines of, you can't bribe your way into a 21st century economy, which was a dig at, Governor Scott,
yes,
his support for Enterprise Florida, tax exemptions, trying to incentivize businesses to move to Florida or expand in Florida. And those moves in recent years have largely been opposed by Republican leadership in both the House and Senate. We've regularly heard House Speaker, calling those, corporate welfare,
yes,
what Scott wanted,
yes,
to do. So it seems like there are areas where they could work together. I'm just wondering what you think about how that would work.
Well, I think, hypothetically, if we speculate a Gillum victory, I would anticipate a very good, viable, pragmatic strategy on Gillum's part would be to almost have a kind of two-pronged strategy where there would be certain policy issues or initiatives where there is some feasibility of finding common ground with what I'm sure will still be a Republican-dominated legislature. And what you've identified there in terms of taking a more enlightened and evidence-based approach to economic development policy in Florida, I think that's a good example of one of those two prongs. The other prong, though, you would have to expect that there will be a number of hot-button issues where Gillum's strategy and what would really only be feasible for him would be to serve as a check or a veto on the initiatives that might be pursued by a Republican-dominated legislature. I mean, there isn't going to be pragmatic common ground on some of these hot-button issues like gun control policy, I don't believe. But certainly it would be prudent of him to have that two-pronged strategy so that he can't be characterized or caricatured as only a check or veto, the voice of no, mm-hmm. in the face of the legislative will. So I think that would be I would expect Gillum to do that. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, and I think he's been able to articulate himself well on the debate stage, just in the way he's been able to give detailed answers to questions that, at least from my perspective, I was seeing his opponents in the Democratic primary sometimes talk, but not really answer the questions.
Yes.
So it does seem like he has a detailed strategy there. Looking at a different race here, we had a handful of primaries for congressional races here in Southwest Florida, including the 19th Congressional District that stretches from like coastal areas around Fort Myers down to Marco Island. And, of course, Francis Rooney holds that seat. David
yes.
Holden won his Democratic primary last night against Todd Truax. Of course, he's celebrating today. But I'm wondering what you think about his chances in a general election matchup with Rooney, simply because Rooney is an incumbent, and this is a district that, at least in recent years, has given that seat to the Republican candidate.
Well, I compliment Holden on his primary success. I'm gratified to see that we actually have Democratic candidates in some races where in some election periods you don't actually see a Democratic challenger. But Southwest Florida demographically and in terms of the way that the district lines have been drawn is still strongly conservative. And if you combine incumbency advantage with a strongly conservative district, even in terms of the way it's been configured, I am not optimistic about the chances of Democratic challengers. But again, the fact that there would be Democratic challengers is itself
– Yes.
Is itself whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, I think it's good for a representative democracy to actually have challengers, to have competitive races.
Yeah. And, nearly 2 million voters in Florida had cast their ballot either, through mail-in or through early voting before Election Day. And in the end, voter turnout eclipsed the 2.1 million votes cast in Florida's last midterm primary in 2014. We've already talked about how voter turnout during midterms just isn't that high. But we did see significantly
yes.
more Floridians
yes.
come out this year than the last time we had a midterm. Did you see anything that would indicate a red wave or a blue wave, or do you just think more folks were engaged this year?
I think it's going to be very similar to what's been seen in the primaries in a number of other states where there was an increase or an upsurge in the turnouts, but not in ways that would signal in any unambiguous fashion a red wave or a blue wave. I think people would really be stretching things a bit to predict a red wave or a blue wave. In most of the primaries where you've seen an upsurge, yes, there's been a significant upsurge or better turnout among on the Democratic side, but there's also been an uptick in Republican turnout as well. So I think it would be way too early to predict how this will impact the outcome, because we're going to have to see, of course, what the turnout levels are in the general election and whether or not the you know, Gillum's success, for example, in obviously mobilizing young and minority voters, whether that will still carry forward into the general election. So I wouldn't make predictions about a red wave or a blue wave, but I do think the signals nationwide are that we can anticipate at least reasonably higher turnout levels in some of these important races.
All right. Well, I'm sure throughout this campaign season, we'll all be on the edge of our seats, and I'm sure we'll have you back in this seat many times to discuss going on and what we're seeing. Dr. Roger Green is a political scientist and chair of the Department of Political Science and Public Administration here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Thanks as always.
Thanks, John.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, we'll be back to the streets of Chicago during the 1968 Democratic National Convention with a retired journalist who was there. I'm John Davis, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.